Here on the Ideas Network, we're used to difficult conversations. We see our mission within this democracy to provide a safe place for those conversations around the issues of our time. But even we wrestle with issues relating to race relations in this country. On this Monday, February 5th, this is The Morning Show. I'm Dean Kallenbach, in for Kate Archer-Kent. We're going to spend the rest of this hour thinking about how we talk about race, not only on talk shows like this, but in our day-to-day life. Our guest has a new book called So You Want to Talk About Race. And as always, we'd like to hear from you on this topic. You can communicate with us by calling 800-642-1234, emailing ideas at WPR.org, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You could also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Our guest is Ijoma Oluo. She is editor-at-large of The Establishment. That's a media platform founded and run by women. She writes and speaks about social justice issues, and her new book is called So You Want to Talk About Race. Ijoma Oluo, welcome.
Hi.
Good to have you along today. Now, much of your book focuses on the need to understand the context and perspective of people of color in order to truly engage in conversations about race. So in that spirit, can you share your experiences initially that led you to care about the issues you deal with in this book?
I felt a lot of it was, I was living this reality where, you know, race is impacting my day-to-day life, as it does for many other people of color. And a lot of people who were close to me who were not people of color, it was not impacting them as well. And when we talk about our relationships and who we are or not close to, you end up sharing things that are important to you. And when these issues that had to do with race that were vitally important would come up, I found that suddenly I didn't have the friend community I thought I did and the support I needed. And I realized that, you know, if someone like me who is incredibly talkative and likes to communicate about a lot of things was having a lot of issues, a lot of people were as well. And so that kind of started my writing career, was trying to find new ways to reach out to people in my own community to help them understand why this was something we needed to talk about. And as that kind of picked up, I realized there were so many other people who were also struggling, people of all races who were struggling to have these conversations in their day-to-day lives, even if maybe they did know all of the facts about these issues or had read all of the books that they could find about these issues. It was with actual conversations where you need to make an impact to, you know, kind of make your relationships better and make your day-to-day life function better, that people were having a lot of issues. So I decided to try to put down a primer to increase the success or the chances of success of these conversations.
Now, in your book, and again, it's called So You Want to Talk About Race, you say the difference in experience and viewpoint between white and black people in America is not a gap, quote, "The Grand Canyon is a gap. This is a chasm you could drop entire solar systems into." Now, those sound a little bit like hopeless words. How do we bridge a chasm of that size?
You know, I think it's important that we understand. We spent a lot of time, you know, I think as kids, a lot of us were told, you know, walk a mile in someone's shoes and then you'll understand. We have to be able to set that aside. We do need to understand that from the moment children of color are born, a large part of their life and the expectations of their life has been predetermined based on their race. And that is an experience that many white people don't understand, because the ways in which their life has been dictated by race has not been made aware to them. We have to then know that you're not going to ever be able to say, oh, I totally understand what that feels like. And a lot of times what stops us from being able to help and listen to other people is because we say that doesn't compute, because it's nothing like what we've experienced. It must not be real. So part of the reason why I point out that, no, this really is a very wide gap, is because then we have to set it aside and kind of get to the basic humanity of people and say, you know what? I will never be able to fully understand what it's like to live the way that you have lived, to know what it's like to be a person of color in this world, but I respect that you're a human being, and I'm willing to listen to you and hear what you're saying and ask what I can do to help and what it is that you need. And so we have to get past this whole, oh, well, yeah, I can understand because this happened to me and that seems related. there really isn't another, you know, a system in society that functions the way that race does. And we have to stop trying to filter these things through our own experiences and only choosing to support and listen to people where it sounds familiar to us. Because if you have a different race, your lived experience in many ways is going to be vastly different.
So you've written a book that encourages people to talk head-on about race and related topics. What's wrong with the way people talk about race now?
I would say one of the first problems that we have when we talk about race is we haven't really updated the conversation as to what racism actually looks like in America. I think from the beginning, you know, that we are taught about racism in America from elementary school on, we are thinking of things like starting with slavery, going through Jim Crow. We talk about, you know, the KKK. We talk about these horrific individual acts, right? We talk about people with evil in their hearts. And a lot of this is focused on intent and whether you love people of color, whether you hate people of color. But what race has really always been is a system in our society. And so when we look at tackling it and we look at how it impacts the lives of people every day, we're actually talking about systems. But we've kept the conversation in intent. So conversations around race oftentimes get stuck around whether or not someone intended to be racist, you know, or intended to do harm. And that's not really where the conversation needs to lie if we want to actually get to solutions.
We invite you to join our conversation. So You Want to Talk About Race is the name of the book. The author is Ijoma Oluo, and she is on the line with us. And we invite you to call with your questions. If you have questions about how to talk about race or what are the ways to talk about race, I mean, how do you broach the subject in an area that might not be comfortable? Call 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org, tweet us at WPR Mornings, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to the phones now and have Mark from Franklin join us. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I always am real leery about any conversation about race, in that race isn't something that you can really define. A lot of times we'll have a researcher on saying, there's a gap in this or there's a gap on that. And people can define themselves of any race they want, or even if they've got history to show this, they could be 1/16th Native American and declare themselves to be Native American, and then they'll throw themselves into some statistical group with Native Americans, even though they're 15/16ths Polish. And this whole thing, I think, is something that's been used for a long time by people to enrich themselves, first slave owners, slave sellers, slave traders, to politicians, to researchers, and it continues on. And there are a lot of the things that are said just don't apply, because they're applying to people who have self-declared themselves to be some race that are only partially some fitting into some group from people in some part of the world. And I hope I'm making sense on that, but it's just there's virtually nobody in this country anymore who is pure Polish or pure Nigerian or whatever. And we lump them all together based on something that happened 10 generations, but not 10, but 4 or 5 generations back, and they're lumped together statistically.
Ijoma Oluo, what are your thoughts on what Mark has to say there?
So it sounds like Mark is talking about where I think a lot of people tend to get confused. First off, we're talking about race versus ethnicity, which is two different things. And it can definitely be confusing, right? Because ethnicity is an actual scientific term, right? What is your ethnic makeup? So you can be, you know, half Polish and, you know, a quarter German. That's your ethnic makeup. And race is sometimes a somewhat arbitrary classification based primarily on appearance, but also sometimes based on parentage. So I, for example, am half Nigerian and half white. But racially, I'm black. And I'm black because of how that functions in society. So as I'm walking down the street, I am viewed as black. I am treated as black. I am treated with the historical trauma that has been, you know, put upon blackness. When cops pull me over, I'm treated as black. When I go for a job interview, I am treated as black. And we have to understand this, that because it, just because at times it seems arbitrary doesn't mean it's real. A lot of our, doesn't mean it's not real. A lot of our social, you know, systems are made up. Money is made up, right? It's a piece of paper that we decide is worth this much money, and we go by those rules. But I cannot imagine myself a millionaire because I choose to, because I say it's made up. That's not going to actually work with the way the system works. Same thing with race. Right now, you know, the average black household makes is worth 1/13 financially, the average white household. Now, that's not a made-up classification. Even though race itself was made up by someone at some point in time, the realities of how it functions in the world is real. And so what we really do have to look at this, because it is impacting the lives of people. And yes, it is unfair that it's based on appearance many times. But, and so it means that some people will say, yes, oh, I'm this. You know, I'm you know, part this. But, you know, they function every day as a white person and perhaps don't face any actual oppression in their day-to-day lives. But what we're talking about when we're trying to come to solutions and making the world a better place is the real ways in which race really does impact the lives of millions and millions of Americans.
We're talking about how we talk about race with Ijoma Oluo, author of the new book, So You Want to Talk About Race. I'm Dean Kallenbach. I'm in for Kate Archer Kent on The Morning Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's The Morning Show. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Our topic for the hour, the subject of our guest's new book, So You Want to Talk About Race, and that guest is Ijoma Oluo. So, do you talk about race? And if so, how do you do it? What's the right way to approach the subject? And does the when or where matter? As always, love to hear from you, 800-642-1234 on this topic, 800-642-1234, or you can do like Mark did and email your comment. And what Mark had to say, Ijoma Oluo was, if I can get it up on my screen, went away again. There it is. Matt from Wausau. Sorry, not Mark. Matt from Wausau called, emailed and said, so it's time to talk about race relations in America. We've been talking for centuries. Where has that got us? The U.S. remains one of the most racist countries in the free world. Anyone that's been to Europe realizes that the segregation in the U.S. is palpable. The election of our first black president has unfortunately been a huge setback for racist citizens, and as racist citizens and politicians, including President Trump, seem emboldened to revert back to the status quo. The time for talk has come and gone, and it's time for action. Waiting for white politicians to come around hasn't proven an effective agent for change. So, Ijoma Oluo, is it too late for talk? Do we just need action? And if so, what action do we need?
And see, therein lies the issue, right? We can say, yes, it is time for action, and it is long past time for action. And then the question becomes, what action? And in order to figure out what needs to be done, we actually do need to talk about it. We need to figure out what is happening today. I think it's important to understand a lot of the frustration we have over discussions of race is because we have been denied the tools to effectively discuss what is happening. It's part of a system that wants us to not be able to have productive conversations on it, that wants us to keep these conversations on a surface level so that we don't actually look at these systems and how they work day to day. So we can have a conversation about race, and I can say something like, oh, it's really hard being black, and then a white person can say, oh, it's also hard being white. and we're not going to actually get anywhere in the conversation. But if I say, you know, these are some of the issues I'm discovering in my day-to-day life. This is what happens to me when I interact with police officers. This is what happens to me when I interact with my son's school. And then someone can hear that and say, oh, okay, I see there's a difference here. I see an opportunity to help. Hey, maybe I can talk to the school. Maybe I should show up in the PTA meetings and support you in these issues. Maybe this is where in our day-to-day lives we can come together and make action for change. But that starts with meaningful conversation, intentful conversation. Conversation should not be the end goal. We don't enter these conversations so that we can all say that we like each other more and we get each other more. We enter these conversations so that we can find opportunities for action. But that means that we have to know that that's why we are entering in the conversation. We have to continuously steer it in that direction. I get that people are really frustrated. I think anyone who's tried to have conversations about race in the past feels that frustration. It's had it gone horribly wrong or had it go nowhere. But the truth is a lot of that is because we do not enter these in intentionally. We do not enter it going, you know what, I'm talking to you about this because I need you to understand where you can help. I need you to understand, you know, where you can hear how my life experience is different than yours so that you can find your privilege in these situations and make a difference. Well, I need to talk to you about this because I need to understand where I can make a difference. We don't set out these conversations like that. Instead, we set out saying, you know what, I just want to know everything about this, and then somehow magically it's going to be fixed. But what we need to be doing is looking for opportunities to act, and we do that through conversation.
You've said that people tell you to stop making everything about race. What's your response to that criticism?
My response, first off, is everything is about race. Race is a cornerstone of this country. And from the first time that settlers came here and decided that they were entitled to land that was not theirs because they were white men and the people who owned the land were not, this country was founded on race. From the moment they decided that they wanted free, controllable labor and they shipped in people of another race, this country has always been about race. Everything is about race. One of the interesting luxuries of being white in this country is that you don't necessarily have to see how things are about whiteness. But almost everything in this country has been set up to cater to whiteness as an identity, as a culture. And when we say we're not talking about race, we're still talking about whiteness, our job system, our economic system, our education system, our entertainment system, our movies, our films, everything is set up to reflect a white identity and a white way of life. So when people say, you're making it about race, it was already about race. What they're saying is I'd like it to stay about my race. I would love to be able to just go through the world not thinking about things as a black woman. You know, I would love to go to a job interview not thinking about how this will, you know, be seen because of my race. But the truth is that, you know, even to be called for a job interview, if I have a black-sounding name, I'm four times less likely to even be called. I'm not the one making that about race. I just want to have a job interview. You know, when I go and see a film and I take my son and he can't imagine himself as a superhero because he has yet to see a character that actually looks like him, he's not making it about race. The unimaginative film creators who decide that superheroes only look one way are. We have to remember that most people of color just want to go about their day like everyone else. And race is being pushed upon them, and it always has been from the moment it was invented. And they would like to get to the point where they don't have to think about it either. But that means first we have to talk about all the ways in which it really has been implanted in every aspect of our lives.
Our guest is Ijeoma Oluo. She's the author of a book just out called So You Want to Talk About Race? And we have people on the line who do want to do exactly that. Francisco from Sister Bay, welcome.
Thank you. I'm ready.
Go ahead. Loaded. We're ready for you.
Loaded for you. The lady speaking, obviously, is a very smart lady. Unfortunately, she's too young to understand the true nature of the division of races we have in the United States. There's money in it. There was money, 350 years of slavery, free labor. There's money in that the Mexicans lost one-third of the United States. We made them rich. The minority, so-called people of color, made you the North Europeans. That's what you are. Not transplanted North Europeans. We made you, the Indians made you rich, the blacks made you rich. Now, the question, the solution to this is to recognize that dark history and make atonement. Hey, how about sharing that wealth with the blacks? How about sharing that wealth with the Indians? How about sharing that wealth with the Mexicans? We have given you trillions and trillions of dollars in gold, silver, and oil. Right now, there's another boom in Texas. Free oil.
And so Francisco and Sister Bay would say that that this is part of the economic system and it's not something that's going to be able to change. You say white supremacy is the nation's oldest pyramid scheme. I'm guessing you don't have a lot of disagreement with him.
No, I don't. Thank him for saying that I sound very young, though. That's nice. This work, it can age you. I'll make sure to tell my high school son. See, it's been proven.
There you go.
Yeah, because he tells me I can't possibly idea that it's embarrassing him. But I would say yes. Race is a function of an economic system. It was a system developed to try to extract labor and resources from people of color. It's a way to justify that. Most people don't want to admit that they just want to exploit people of color. The average person doesn't want to be that person, so you create systems of race to justify that. We are, in fact, talking about an economic system. And an economic system, you know, that has been brutalizing people of color for hundreds of years. So I absolutely agree. And when we look at the impact that it has, it really does come down to these concrete, identifiable, measurable impacts in life expectancy and wealth and health of people of color. And part of the way in which we talk about it is because these are systems, that means that we interact with it day in and day out. So I may not have the power, and I know I don't, because if I did, I would have been doing this already, to say, you know what, I'm going to use my power now to make sure that people of color are paid back for the labor stolen from them. I do not have that power, right? But if you are someone who, say, is in a manager's meeting and you're looking around and you're white and everyone's white like you, you have power in that moment to speak up and ask why this system is set up the way it is. If someone who's running for city council knocks on your door and they want your vote, you do have the power to ask what they are doing to improve the economic and social lives of people of color in the city. You can ask what they're doing about affordable housing. You can ask what they're doing about police reform. You can make that an issue. We all interact with our financial, social, and political systems. And part of the reason why we need to talk about it is because we can find those interactions and find where we have levers we can pull to start to make a real difference. These do have measurable impacts, and massive amounts of work need to be done in order to get things where they need to be to undo centuries of harm. But we all do own small pieces of the puzzle that we can get to work on making measurable differences now. And we need to, because it is crushing people. The system is crushing and killing people. So every day that we wait, someone else is lost.
Let's move to Brian in Madison on the phones. Brian, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. I guess what I'm saying to the guest there, I would have to ask her how, in her position that she's in at this point in time, she worked hard to get to there, where she's at now. So therefore, the race part about how inequality is, and then the race part of it is, if you work hard, I don't care if you're African American, Mexican. It doesn't matter. If you work hard, you're going to go places. I guess I just don't understand that race card thing.
Ijoma Oluo, there certainly are economically successful African-American people in this country.
Yes, there are. And, you know, it's interesting to me because a lot of times I get messages like this. People say, what about Beyonce? What about Oprah? I would say part of the problem lies in if you can list the successful people of color, we have an issue. We don't list the successful white people. There are too many to list. I think it's important to realize this. I am not working, and I think most of us are not working, to make sure that exceptional people of color can become great successes. And you really do have to be exceptional as a person of color in order to be a success. There are plenty of people who work hard every day of their lives and can make nothing of it. The system of race that's functioning from birth, and when I say that, I mean from birth. Right now, black mothers have 3 times the maternal death rate of white mothers. They are dying and their babies are dying. And right now, researchers are saying that they pretty much think it is due to living in a racist system, with a racist medical system, and dealing with the day-to-day stresses of race. We are literally talking about your ability to even being born being dictated by race. Then it starts at age 4 in preschool. Black preschoolers at the age of 4 are 4 times more likely to be suspended from preschool than white preschoolers. And studies have shown that when you put young children at play and have teachers watch them, they will see the same actions by brown and black boys as fighting as they see as play by white children. Then we have black children who are 3 to 5 times more likely to be suspended from elementary school and beyond. And from then on, more likely to be pushed into our criminal justice system. We have teachers who are more likely to think that black and brown children are not capable of doing good work and are less likely to reach out to parents when children are struggling or to offer additional assistance or even praise when they're doing well. We have jobs where you're 4 times less likely to be called for an interview if you have a black-sounding name, like, let's say, Jamal Washington, right? You are 3 times more likely to be arrested by police, three to five times more likely to be killed by police. This is not a race card. The race card is not a thing that exists. These are real measurable impacts in life. And you can try as hard as you want in life, but if you can't even get a job interview because your name sounds black, what are your efforts going to do then? We have to realize that these are real measurable impacts. So either we believe that there is something fundamentally wrong with black people, that black people are 13 times less worthy of having net wealth than white people, or there was a problem in the system, or Latinx people are 11 times less likely of having net worth. They're just working 11 times less harder than white people, because that's what we're saying right now. The average white household has 11 times the net wealth of your average Latinx and Hispanic household. Or we have a problem in the system.
Her new book is called So You Want to Talk About Race. She is Ejima Oluo, and she is the author of that book. She's our guest here on the Ideas Network on the morning show. Dean Kallenbach here subbing for Kate Archer Kent this morning. Let's move back to the phones. Troy from Muskego is on the line. Troy, welcome.
Hello. I just want to say that first of all, I'm a big advocate of Black Lives Matter, and I want to say that I agree with everything you're saying. And I think that the last caller that called in will prove my point about systemic racism. I think the real problem is basically it comes down to wages and social and economic inequality. And I'll just use Wisconsin as an example. That basically what we have is a system where our politicians have consistently demonized and scapegoated minorities, you know, whether it's saying, well, your tax money is going for people on welfare, or whatever they use, tactics they use to paint a picture of, you know, the portrait of these minorities as being, you know, lazy or whatever comes with that, whatever we're competing for these limited resources. And I definitely feel that a lot of people make a choice rather than organize a union or fight for, you know, stand up to corporate greed or money grubbers. What they end up doing is they end up turning and turning on each other. And I think the solution, I'll be honest with you, is it starts with wages going up. And I think blacks and all minorities need to pick up the sword and start fighting for higher wages. Dr. King said, it's cruel to tell a man to pull himself up by his bootstraps if he doesn't even own a pair of boots.
Ejima Oluo.
I would say, first off, we need to look at levels of privilege here. People of color have, of course, been fighting for living wages for a very long time. They've been fighting for wages at all. We must remember that, you know, as the system of race started, black people were brought here given no wages whatsoever for their work. So, I mean, to say that people of color need to pick up the sword and fight for higher wages, I would say there's a big bit of an issue here. I think it's also important to remember that even in old unionist movements, race asserted itself. And there were people saying, yes, we are all in the union, but we're going to meet the needs of white workers first, because those systems of privilege exist even in our labor movement. I definitely believe that we do need to look at both economics and race because they function together. But we can't act as if one functions more than the other or functions without the other. So we can't say it is all wages and all it's all money, and we can't say it's all race. They work together. Race is a function of the economics. So I think that we definitely do need to look at that, and we definitely do need to look at wages. But like I said before, if you're less likely to even be called for a job interview because you have a black-sounding name, how is increasing wages going to help you? We have to look at both. We have to make sure that once you do get a job, you are given a living wage, but also that you can even get an interview or that you are able to make your way through school to be qualified for that because you were not expelled, suspended, or arrested from your school because of racial bias. So we have to look at all of these things together and find where we can come together. And that's part of why intersectionality is so important to our work on race, because we have to look at where both class and race intersect and play off of each other to kind of cement our places on this, you know, ladder of oppression and privilege. And we have to try and deconstruct all of it. It sounds like a tall order, but actually what it means is that we all have different opportunities. We have more opportunities to deconstruct it. So some areas we can battle on front of class. Some areas we can battle on race. Some areas we can battle on both. But we really do have to kind of be careful to not say, if we just looked at class, it would go away. If we just looked at wages, it would go away. Because that hierarchy would still exist.
Ijeoma Oluo, the NFL season ended yesterday with the Super Bowl in Minneapolis. Audiences are down for the NFL, and some attribute it to the political controversy that was caused by players kneeling for the national anthem in sympathy of the Black Lives Matter movement, which Troy just mentioned. The original kneeler, Colin Kaepernick of the 49ers at the time, wanted to start a conversation about police brutality, and it did get conversations started, but mostly about whether or not the kneelers were patriotic. What did he do wrong?
I don't think he did anything wrong whatsoever. I think that's it's a symbol of where we are as a country. I think that this is honestly what white supremacy looks like, where the discomfort of people talking about the murder of black people is worse to you than the actual murder of black people by the state. That says much more about what our society does wrong and what people watching these protests are doing wrong than what Colin Kaepernick did. He is an amazing person who just finished donating $1 million to racial equity groups. I don't think he's done anything wrong at all. We are talking about this issue right now because of what he's done, and that is vitally important. We have a lot of people who are uncomfortable, who are wondering, why is he doing this protest? A lot of people who have been educated by his actions. So, no, I don't think he's done anything wrong. I think he has been wronged, grievously wronged. But if your priority, when you're watching a black man kneeling because he is tired of watching video after video after video of his people being killed like dogs in the streets and having the people who kill them see no repercussions, if you're watching that and you're upset because it is ruining your game, the person who's wrong is not him. And I think we need to look at how much we actually do value black lives, if that's really the sentiment that people have. Oh, I want to keep this out of my game. You have a game that is played with a large percentage of people who are still at risk, people who are watching their own people being murdered, but they're not allowed to voice their disapproval with that system. They're supposed to entertain you, but not act like human beings who are impacted by that. That's what white supremacy actually looks like. When you say, I want these black people to just be athletes, to just entertain me, to just keep me happy, and I don't want to hear about how this system is brutalizing them and murdering them, because that ruins my enjoyment of a game. I want them to play like it's not happening. That is white supremacy in action.
Ijoma Oluo is our guest this hour as we explore how we have conversations about race designed to bridge this country's racial divide. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back talking about race. So You Want to Talk About Race is the book authored by our guest Ijoma Oluo. She's also editor-at-large of The Establishment, a media platform founded and run by women. She writes and speaks about social justice issues. And as always, love to hear from you, and we've heard from several already today. 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Are you African-American, and what should people know about your experience as a black person in America, in Wisconsin? What don't people of other races realize? And if you're white, what have you realized about race when you've talked to other white people and people of color? How do you see your role in addressing today's problems related to race? Great to hear from you, if we could. We did get an email from Steve. He says, I'm a white male. I recognize that I benefit from being white, that there is white privilege. And so now what? I don't really have any black friends, so can only do this on a theoretical basis. What can Steve do to move the conversation forward, Ijoma Oluo?
Well, I would say first, one of the hardest parts of this whole process Steve has done, which is acknowledging that privilege exists and racial privilege exists and that he has some. Now, that part is the hardest part. The rest is actually a bit easier, because what you do then is you look at your privilege and say, where does it function in my day-to-day life? You don't actually, if you don't actually know any black people or people of color, you might want to take a look at that, see what you can do to fix it. If anything, we live in a very interconnected world, which means if you don't have access to people of color in your day-to-day life, you can elsewhere. And I think that's very important to broaden your idea of community. But secondary, that means that every day there are things in your life that may be made easier because of your race, but that also means there are areas in the world that you have access to that others don't. You are more likely as a white male to be the type of person that your local politicians are courting. You are more likely to be the type of person that your school people running for school board are courting, that your city council is courting. You make financial decisions every day as to what movies you're going to see, what books you're going to buy. And these are where you start to look at your privilege. When you say, you know what, every book I read, I end up thinking, man, that character really gets me. This guy's just like me. That's your privilege in action, because very few people of color get to read a book and say, oh, yeah, that character lived my life. So then think, am I financially supporting things that consistently reinforce that all of these characters have to be white? And, you know, or can I make a different financial decision, right? When your politicians come by and they're sending out flyers talking about preserving your way of life, think, wait a minute, are they talking about my way of life as a white man? Now's a good time to ask them about what they're doing for way of life for people of color. These are where you have opportunities, where you recognize your privilege. You don't recognize it just so that you feel bad. You recognize it because those are opportunities to make change. Those are rooms that you are in that people of color aren't. And so I would say, once you recognize your privilege, start finding where it interacts with the decisions you make every day so that you can start making different choices. And those have measurable impacts.
Well, our listeners are not shy about wanting to talk about this topic. Our phone lines are full, and let's move to another call. This from Mary Beth in Milwaukee. Mary Beth, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I wanted to talk about white fragility and how we need to get over ourselves. I'm a white woman. I see people of color every day, people of color being passed over. If I walk into a store with a friend of mine who's a person of color, she gets ignored. They look at me, they acknowledge, the clerk looks at me, acknowledges me. but not the person of color. And it's my responsibility to speak up to other white people in particular. It's my job to point out the injustices. In my experience, I've noticed with other white people, if they're not receptive to hearing that they have white privilege, if there's a person of color speaking to them about racism, they write it off as, oh, they're an angry black person, or they're angry because something personal hurt them in the past, instead of acknowledging that our country was made to keep a certain group of people down. I mean, that's what capitalism needs in order to succeed.
Thank you, Mary Beth. You mentioned, and Chief talks about privilege. Again, there's a phrase often used in social justice conversations, check your privilege. And you say that's often maligned. What's the role of privilege in these crucial conversations?
Well, as we were talking about just with the previous caller, privilege is really where we find our opportunities to make change. It is not fun to think about privilege and think about where you may be benefiting at the expense of other people. That hurts because we all like to think of ourselves as good people who have really positive impacts on the world. And so to think that something which we may or may not have had a conscious choice in constructing means that we are playing parts in oppressing other people can be a hard thing to swallow, right? And you want to think, no, because I love people, so therefore I am always making a positive impact. But systems of race are designed to function whether we do, all we have to do is nothing. All we have to do is sit and be in the system, and we will play our part. And so we have to make conscious choices to do better. But that means that we have to examine the ways in which we may have been contributing to the harm of others so that we can stop. So we have to always ask ourselves this. We want to always think of ourselves as good people, or do we actually want to be better people? Because you can ignore systems of race and always think that you have been the least racist person without a racist bone in your body your whole life and everything is dandy. But that's not going to mean that you're not still going to be doing real harm. Or you can do the really hard work of looking at times where you may have been contributing to a system of racial oppression so that you can find the opportunity to stop doing that harm and start helping. And it's all about who you actually want to be. It's who do you want to appear to be versus who do you want to actually be. And white fragility, which is a wonderful term coined by Robin DiAngelo, is oftentimes talks about what that pain is in realizing and fighting back against figuring out that you may have been doing harm, whether you intended to or not. And a lot of people will fight viciously to avoid that because to them, that's the greatest racial pain they have experienced. If you are a white person and you have not been actively discriminated your entire life because of race, then the most painful thing that will happen to you regarding race to find out that you may have harmed other people. And then that can easily become the focus when you lose perspective and when you realize that it's still really not about you. And it really is about fixing real measurable harm done to people of color in this country. It can be really hard to pull yourself back from that. And it starts with getting used to looking at your privilege and getting over those initial feelings of guilt and shame and realizing, no, I have an opportunity to do better here, and try to find those opportunities in that conversation.
Ijeoma Oluo is our guest. She's author of a new book out called So You Want to Talk About Race, and we're going to get to the packed phone lines, but there's one story and in the book that that particularly brought a smile to my face. Your book was born from the fact that you have a lot of conversations about race. You didn't have your first conversation about race with your mother until you were well into your 30s. Can you share that story briefly for us?
Yeah, this seems to be a favorite of a lot of people. my mom, of course, we had those practical conversations, right? My mom is a white woman from Kansas. And so she had a lot of practical conversations of, how to act around cops or explaining why we were being followed by security. Why this kid shouted a racist slur at us at school. We would have those conversations. But, we had our dinner table conversations like many other families. How was your day? How was homework? What show do you want to watch tonight? And I didn't realize that we hadn't had a really substantive adult conversation about race or a conversation about our, you know, different roles in systems of race until well into my work as a writer and speaker on race. And it wasn't until my mom called me to tell me about this grand epiphany of race that she had had after having a tense conversation with a black coworker that I realized, like, oh, no, I've been spending all this time trying to help plenty of other people and a lot of white people get better on these issues, and I forgot to talk to my mom because she's about to make a huge mistake at work. And it was really interesting and uncomfortable. It was very uncomfortable, probably one of the most uncomfortable conversations on race I've ever had, to talk with my mother and start from, you know, square one and say, oh, wow, Mom, we haven't really talked about what your role as a white person is in this. And starting over, but I'm glad we did because it started a path of, you know, real understanding. And her way of feeling really connected to me and my work and finding her place. She cared deeply about people of color as the mother of three black children. You know, she cares deeply about race and racism, but she couldn't find her place in it because we had actually never talked about it. And now that she kind of knows, she has a space to ask.
Let's move to the phones again. Chris from Stevens Point, thanks for joining us. Chris, you're on the air.
I'm really conflicted on this topic, and it's just really, really a challenge. I haven't come into contact with a lot of people of color as I was younger. Well, I mean, Mexicans, yes, but black people, no, growing up in central Wisconsin. But you know, when I got to college, I got to meet a lot of new people and got to really broaden my perspective. And I mean, I was raised to, you know, just respect everybody and, you know, give everybody a chance. And that's always what I try to do in situations with my job right now and stuff like that too. My big question to get some of these people who fight, some of the white people that push back against the systemic racism part, I was just wondering, is there anything that, because I've also got a friend who's worked in the Milwaukee area for a long time, and now he's working for a nonprofit that helps teach, you know, job coaching and stuff to try to help people get better jobs, help black people in the inner cities and underprivileged people, I think of all races, to get better jobs and stuff like that.
And Ijoma Oluo, if you could take about 10 seconds to address basically what can we do to meet in the middle, which is a good final question.
You know, one thing I would definitely do is do your research first. Start with some of the numbers. If you have people who are saying, no, I just don't believe there really is a systemic problem, look at the numbers. Fundamentally, it comes down to either you believe there's something fundamentally wrong with people of color, where their life expectancy, their wealth, their health are vastly impacted in negative ways versus that of white people, or you believe there's a problem with the system. And that's really what it comes down to. Do you believe there's something wrong with people of color, or do you believe there's a problem with the system? And if you don't believe there's something wrong with people of color, then you know we have a systemic issue that is impacting the lives of people of color, and we need to start addressing it.
And we thank you, Ijoma Oluo, for joining us this hour. She's the author of a new book, So You Want to Talk About Race. The Morning Show is produced by Keely Butina and Niaja Ellison, Michelle Johnson, executive producer. I'm Dean Collin, back in for Kate Archer Kent. Tomorrow at this time, it's Glenn Moberg in for Kate and On Your Money at this hour. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.